All right. Today, I'm super excited for this one. I'm joined by Jamie Sparrow-Roberts, who is head of casting at Walt Disney Animation Studios. Jamie, welcome. Thank you for joining me. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure. That's the most formal thing I'll do in this whole session, by the way. Everything here on out is going to be a lot more laid back. For those who are tuning in that maybe aren't familiar with you, I've given the very, very, very Cliff Notes intro there, but do you want to give just a little bit of background on sort of who you are, what you do, and give people a bit of insight into your world?
I am the head of casting for Disney Animation. I work on all of the animated features that come out of the Disney studios, as well as the short form content, and now the content that comes out for Disney Plus and all of the streaming platforms.
So, you know,
I put the actors in the movies that come out that are animated.
Amazing. Not much. Small stuff. Small details. Small
the
little
fun
things.
Stuff.
The fun stuff. What's it been like for you in the last sort of year with obviously COVID, and I'm assuming you're working from home.
Right.
What's that shift been like working within a structure such as Disney that is obviously all encompassing? How have you found that transition?
Well, it's not ideal because I do like to be in the room with actors and I like to have my directors in the room with the actors. Obviously, that has not been an option. So we've had to, you know, make adjustments in that way. No casting director, I don't think, probably likes doing it this way. But we've been so lucky because we haven't had to halt production because animation is one of the few media that haven't had to stop because we are able to all be at home and working with the technology that we have. We've been so fortunate to continue production. Raya and the Last Dragon was done almost, the production was done almost all at home. A lot of the casting was done at home, and a majority of the casting that you'll see in Encanto that we have coming out in the fall was done at home, you know, just all over Zoom, and a lot of taped auditions coming in, you know, people that they've been doing it in their closet or wherever they can find a quiet place, and sending them to us, and you know, having me either get on the phone with them and redirect them, or having, you know, little Zoom conferences. It's been very difficult, but we have, you know, been powering through and trying to, you know, are looking forward to getting back to a place where we can all be in the room together.
Because I guess even though people might think, oh, it's, I don't mean to sound like it's just voice, it's not just voice, but they might think, well, why do you need to be in the room with them? But you're still actually, I saw something you were in an interview where you were saying it, you actually don't really focus just on people who have different voices or that do different accents. You want them to be pretty much as close to themselves as possible. And it's more about their ability to improvise and how they actually are in their room. So how much of that do you lose when you're doing stuff just on Zoom from your side of things, if anything?
You know, it's kind of hard to tell because it's only been a year, right? But I try to get as much out of them as I can. That is where the conference calls come into play, I guess. It, instead of just having them send an audition into the ether and just, you know, email us their the material that they do from the sides, we do have these meetings, you know, where they have an opportunity to sit down with the directors and, you know, have, you know, a conversation and see, you know, what the rapport is like and what their personalities are like, and not just hire people off of the audition that they do. That's not particularly helpful. Yeah, I don't really hire people to do, you know, cartoony voices. I hate using air quotes, but in that particular
situation, I think I did a second ago. So we're one for one, and now we won't do it anymore.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense. I think from way back in my immediate mind, and you probably hear this all the time, is I go to Robin Williams, Aladdin, Genie. That's my first thing of Disney voiceover, taking it to such a different level. Mm-hmm. But Robin Williams is an anomaly, or was an anomaly, in that he actually was all those voices. So it was still him in many ways. When you're having actors come in, do you think when they're not necessarily voiceover specialists or do that as a specific part of their career, do you think the big misconception is that point around they think it's, or we think it's just voices? Because I would have made that mistake going back for sure.
That happens often, yes. But I do, I tend to very often establish right away on a breakdown in particular. And I hope that the agent is passing along the breakdown to the actors right away, that that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for actors who come in and bring a performance, a real acting performance to the character and not bring in a voice. I don't want a vocal performance per se. I want the entire performance. I tend to put out auditions to actors that I know are actors and not just voice performers. I think that there are roles that are right for actors who do voices. I think a lot of times that there are TV series, for instance, that they don't have a lot of time to establish character, and you're also catering to a very specific audience of maybe very small children that have a short attention span, that are not looking to build a character arc, or, you know, that you have to indicate right away who the character is. And so putting on a particular voice or grabbing a small child's attention with a particular type of tone or something that's clearly over the top is needed in that instance. For the projects that I work on, we have a little more time to establish who the character is, and there's a little more to it. The dialogue is a little, you know,
it's storytelling. It's just traditional, powerful storytelling that just happens to be animated, but it's still the same thing.
Right. And also, I like to think that the movies that we're making are for everybody, not just a specific audience that's, you know, eating cereal in the morning. Not to say that there's anything wrong with cartoons, because believe me, I watched cartoons as a kid and I have children, and, you know, they're important as well. It's just different. And I think that that there's a different kind of performance that's required for what I think I'm doing.
Sure.
That's all. I hope that didn't sound elitist, because it didn't mean it. I didn't mean for it to. I just think it's just apples and oranges. It's just like live action, because the first half of my career, it was in live action. It's just a different kind of performance. And as a casting director, when I worked in live action, I realized when I moved over to animation that I had to exercise a different muscle, because looking for actors that can do animation is very different than looking for actors that can do live action.
That was going to be a question, so you've just answered that for me. So I'll just leave now, and you can just do this. I was going to say, how did that help you having, or hinder you doing live action, moving into this world, because you're looking for authentic performances, but you've kind of touched on that. What is the distinction?
It only helped me. I mean, all of the experiences that I've had in casting have only helped me, you know, to become a better casting director, I hope, over the years. But I think the biggest difference for me when I became an animation casting director is that I realized that I didn't have the ability to look at actors for, you know, in and allow them to fall back on their physical charisma. Because once you step behind a microphone and I close my eyes, or I'm looking at an image of a particular piece of artwork or character or whatever, and I stop looking at the actor, sometimes what's appealing about that actor falls away if I'm not looking at them. And that was hard for me, because there is so much about so many actors that is so beautiful about them physically, and not just, you know, a good looking person necessarily, but there are a lot of actors that convey performance through their eyes, or, you know, like there's so much that comes through, so much emotion that comes through something that they do with their face or the way that they move, or, you know, and you don't.
But a lot of those things get fused into these characters now, though. So oftentimes,
that can be true. Yes, because we do. We will video you know, we'll record them while they're recording their voice. We will do a video recording of them and then send that recording to the animator, and the animator will then use that for reference when they're making the character move. So yes, that does kind of come through sometimes. Yes, it does happen. It's different though.
Sure.
There are some actors that I find extremely charismatic on screen that it just doesn't translate for animation. That's the job of that. That's really where the animator comes into play. So it can't always be, it can't fall on the actor always. Sure. The animator has to be able to help, you know, tell the story as well in that way.
Well, it's the same with live action, where the editor still makes the performance heightened, or if it's a bad edit, or worse than what it was, or the DP. It's always a collaboration, right?
For sure.
And I guess whoever's coming in to do the voice is just, again, like anything, collaborating with that team to heighten that to another level.
Absolutely. I find it particularly in animation and at my studio, because it is such a close-knit group and we do all rely on each other so much, the collaboration is huge. And it's also lucky for the actors that come in to work with us, because our writers who are on staff are not married to their words in a way that I found a lot of times, especially in television, that writers can be, you know, because of the timing, you know, you have to stay on, you know, point with the time because you only have that 22 minutes or whatever it is. Sure. They need things to be done word perfect or verbatim. At our studio, we really encourage the actors, like you said before, to improvise and to help, you know, bring the character to life. And who knows the character better than the person playing the role? So if that actor comes in and says something that maybe only that character would say, it really does help the audience connect to the character better.
When that comes to the actual audition process for it, let's assume there's no COVID, because it's going to go away soon, right?
I hope so.
let's assume there isn't. When people come in, and obviously this is Disney, so everything's going to be NDA'd, or pretty much 99% of it's NDA'd. People, I'm assuming, aren't necessarily getting sides from the actual film. There might not even be a script. So I'm guessing they're coming in with scenarios or maybe scenes from something similar to what you're casting, but not the thing itself. What tips do you have for people coming in when they're not really given a whole lot of information as to what it is that they're performing for, potentially not even much on the character, because that's very different to going in for something with a full breakdown and a script to read?
That's a good question. It's funny because every project that I work on is different. Sometimes I do give sides from the script and we'll just change the names of the characters, or we change, you know, a few little things here and there on the side so that you can't really tell what's going on. And with our projects, we tend to rewrite things so many times that I could give you a set of real sides from the beginning, and then it doesn't end up in the movie anyway, so it doesn't matter. And other times, we'll pull scenes from pre-existing, you know, material, even like classic materials, and have you do those scenes. I try to give actors as much of an idea of who the character is as possible. But my recommendation is if you're in the room with the casting director, is to come prepared with as many questions as you possibly can. And the biggest thing is to listen, because I find that a lot of times that actors come in so nervous and they come in prepared with questions, but they're not really hearing what the casting director is saying because they're so nervous. But that's your opportunity, you know, to really get the part. So if you can absorb as much as you possibly can and set aside your anxiety for a minute and realize that the casting director is there to help you get the job, because I'm only good at my job if I can put somebody in the role. So I want you to get the part, and I don't want you to be nervous asking me anything, because the better you are at your audition, the better you make me look. So
win-win.
I guess asking questions and listening is the best advice that I can give.
Sure. And that's interesting. You touched on the nerves there. It's a common thread that comes through, whether it's live action or animation. I think it's just that idea that the power is outside of the actor, and it's
power is outside of the casting director too. I know that actors are very often intimidated by casting directors, and I think that there are nice people out there, and there are evil people out there, and there are intimidating casting directors out there, and
that's
nice
irrespective of casting and acting anyway. Exactly. That's just in the world. I think, to be honest, in the last year or so with this whole situation, there's been a bit of a drop of that false veneer, because I think we've just seen more and more stuff like this where people within your field are being more open because they've had more time, and it's that just a very obvious thing of, oh, they're human too, which is such a stupid comment, but I think it helps just when it comes to getting back into rooms and performing that it's a collaboration. And it's not the end of the world if we don't, you know, do a good job or book it, because we've been through COVID. There's worse stuff that could happen, right?
Well, I've said it a million times, Ashley, like I cannot do my job without actors, and I don't need 20 actors. I need 2 million actors, because 20 actors don't fulfill the 400 roles that I have a year. So I need to be able to go through as many actors as I can searching for the right thing. So, you know, if I'm intimidating to actors, or I'm not able to get actors to come in who aren't anxious or can't, you know, focus and listen to me, or, you know, aren't having a good time in my office, then I can't do my job. So that means I'm doing something wrong.
Sure. How do you, you touched on that, you mentioned they're finding actors and obviously wanting lots of them. How do you normally go about that process? Do you go straight through breakdown services like a live action breakdown would, straight to agents, bit of a mix?
Again, it's different for every project and it's different for every role. It kind of depends on what it is that I'm looking for. And to be honest with you, there are times where I just go straight to the reps directly, because I know that, you know, if I put something out on breakdown that I'm not going to get the, you know, if the request is I need to stunt cast a part and it has to be an A-list actor for a cameo, there's no point in me putting out a huge breakdown.
Sure.
Yeah. But if I am looking for a 14-year-old Polynesian character, female that can sing, that possibly is unknown, and yet, and you know, to be the lead in a film or whatever, and I can't think of any off the top of my head, then I will do a nationwide search and open calls and hire casting directors all over the Pacific. And, you know, I'll do whatever I have to do. So it's just kind of depends on the nature of the character.
Sure. That sounds really cool that you made that whole thing up just on the spot. Now you should make that film. Right. That was great. Right. That was amazing. I mean, touching on that, because, you know, I wanted to ask about when you are looking for kids or people that maybe, you know, are under 18, which comes up quite often, such as in this imaginary movie you've just mentioned.
Right.
Is that it's a different challenge, I would assume. What different kinds of considerations are there when you're doing that? I don't want to say that it makes it harder. I'm just assuming there's different things to take into consideration.
In particular?
Yes, especially. Or does it not?
I don't know. I think the challenge is more on the production than it is on the casting aspect of it, because production
hours,
has a limitation. Legal. Yeah, they have the need to have the, you know, the social workers there, and the parents are more involved, and the hour limitations. For us, it's more, you know, the labor laws follow us too, you know, where we don't have kids typically, if it's a school year or whatever, we don't have them typically come in until after school hours, and, you know, there's that kind of thing. But, and sometimes it's, if they're very small, it's harder for us to audition them, because maybe sometimes they don't read or whatever, or they come in too rehearsed because they've memorized the lines and they've gone over them so many times, it's hard for them to deter from what they already have, you know, rehearsed 40 million times. But, you know, for me, casting children is the same as casting adults, because they're just, you know, they're human beings too. It's just different, I guess.
Ultimately, I guess they're still there to play, right? You want to just
exactly. I think it's harder to get them to improvise.
Right.
Because they have been rehearsing and they don't have
want to do a bad job.
Sure. They don't have the same ability to think on their feet as most adults do, I guess, because they don't have the experience. It's just that's how it's different. But when you do find a kid that is able to improvise, then that's when you're super lucky and you hire them.
Yeah. I can imagine. And obviously, improvisation clearly then is one of those skill sets you would recommend, I would gather, actors to take up, to learn, to study. This is a terrible question, but I like asking terrible questions.
Nature. I love when you set things up like that, Ashley. You just in advance, you're just letting me know.
Yeah. Just as
a preface. I'm not going to enjoy this.
This is a preface. Yeah, you're not going to enjoy being here. Nature or nurture on improvising. Is it something that you feel people can maybe innately have, or is it just like most skills, something that you just nurture as a tool over time? Thoughts? No right or wrong answer to that.
That's a good question. To be honest with you, the only skill in my lifetime, and this is not necessarily just true with actors, but I think in general, I'm 46. And I think that the only skill that I've realized that you can't teach somebody is common sense. Everything else I think can be taught. Yeah. Is that funny? I think that you can learn how to act if you study hard enough. I think you really can. I think you can learn to improvise because there are enough tools that, you know, can be packed up in a box. And if you really carry them along with you, you can learn that. I think there are enough, there's like a vocabulary that that improv actors can, you know, carry along with them that you can fool somebody into believing that you can improvise. Mm-hmm. I think there are people that are innately funny. And I'm not sure how funny you can teach somebody to be, but I think you can kind of fake it. It's hard, but there are definitely people that are way better at it than other people. I think it can be taught. I don't think that you're ever going to be fabulous at it if it doesn't come naturally to you.
Does that make sense? I think so. Yes. I think like anything, you can definitely learn pretty much most things apart from probably common sense, to your point. That's another podcast.
Yeah, right. I don't think that if you're an actor, I don't think you necessarily need to push yourself to do something that isn't your forte. I think that if you want to pursue acting and you want to be successful at it, that you should lean into whatever it is that you're wonderful at or whatever it is that you're booking and go with that. I don't think that you should fight against it. I think that if you really want to, you know, make a living at it and pursue it and have a career and something's working for you, why, you know, try to push something into push a square peg into a round hole. Sounds crazy
what you're saying.
What? But you know, the actors are glutton for punishment. So
I just think it's that thing of we can do everything that always comes into our head. Like, no, I can do this and I can do that. And I can be an action star and a voiceover star. And I can also do comedy on the same day every week. And
some people can.
But I guess within the realms of this and the confines of voiceovers and improv, I guess it's that sharpness of thought that you're really looking to gauge in the room with people, just the ability to, it's that Robin Williams thing. I mean, he's again the anomaly because he was so fast, but there's so many other great people that you look at Dwayne Johnson with what he did in Your Imaginary Film.
Dad has it.
Yeah. There's so many. And that was, I think, maybe more where I was leaning from, because I think that's cultivated with those people, but it still has to come from a source of something innate.
I know Josh. I didn't know Robin Williams, but I can tell you right now, after meeting Josh Gad, it takes you 2 seconds to realize that he's born with that. That's something special that is he that comes from deep within. I mean, somebody like him, it's his personality. It's who he is. He's extremely intelligent. He has those things where he asks questions and he listens. You can tell when you're talking to him that he is absorbing what you're saying. I think that being a good listener is such a huge part of being a good actor. and being a great observer, I think that he just is very hyper aware of what's going on around him at all times, and he watches people and he listens. And I think that that's just a great way to learn how to be and how to, you know, channel that into all the characters that he does, and also how to speak, and improvising is so much about, like, you know, when you think about bringing words to your lips right away and on the spot, if you can remember conversations that you've had or what people have said to you in the past, it comes to your tongue quicker. And he has that ability. That's something that that's an ability that I definitely don't have, which is probably why I'm a casting director, not an actor. Wanted to be an actor.
No. Am I making this up though? Or did you do some voiceover work yourself though?
I only did what everybody always says that to me, and I'm going to kill Rich Moore, who was the director that put me in. Okay. He put me in Wreck-It Ralph, the first one. I did one line in a movie one time.
Now you're a voiceover actor for life.
I've never wanted to be an actor. I do not consider myself an actor. I spoke one line in Wreck-It Ralph. I was she's like a Dance Revolution girl. I said, basically, okay, guys, the arcade's closed. That's it. I'm not an actor. I just said a line in a movie once.
I'm going to make that the soundbite for this whole episode. And then I'm going to take out Facebook ads and Google ads just to make sure people get hammered in perpetuity.
I actually feel badly because somebody probably either A, could have been tapped heart lead and gotten into SAG for that, or B, could have made their insurance or something. And I took away somebody's opportunity to,
maybe by some divine intervention, you helped them to get something different that was even a bigger role. So let's just, you know, look at it.
You know how funny it is that I've actually gotten fan mail for that part before, where people have taken like a screenshot of their TV, like they've taken a picture of their television with that character on the screen and sent me the picture with a self-addressed stamped envelope in the mail and asked me to autograph it and send it back to them.
That there shows the fans, power.
There are Disney fans out there that, you know, they're that dedicated.
It's either Disney fans or it's those scalpers that are looking to make a quick buck on eBay, to be fair. I mean, that's where my mind went into a dark place.
I was going to say, if my autograph is worth money to somebody in that way, you know, and they spent the 35 cents or however much it costs to mail something in snail mail now.
More power to them.
Good luck.
But it shows the power of these movies and the reach and, like you said, the strength of the fan base, but also just the way that these stories do touch people. And, you know, I think that that's very telling. It must be a huge joy in just the work that you do, because you're always going to be getting into these new stories and working on stuff that it must be, I'm assuming, challenging and probably very, very, very go, 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 go a lot of the time. But also there must be a lot of rewarding moments. I mean, do you have any sort of key moments over the last 10 years or so doing this to stand out? No pressure.
I just love, honestly, I cannot, I'm so happy that they'll pay me to do something that I love this much. And the rewarding moments are, it's funny because it might actually surprise you what I would say the rewarding moments are. But for me, the best part is, oh my God, I have said this so many times that people are probably so sick of hearing me say it, but I love actors so much that the fact that I get them at the best 15 minutes of their day, and that they come into my office when I get to be in my office, and they're happy to see me and they're smiling and they have hope and there's an opportunity there, and they come in and they entertain me. And a lot of the times they come in there to make me laugh. So that part's amazing for me and rewarding. But then they sing for me, which to me is my favorite thing ever, because I love working on the musicals. And then they leave, and they leave happy, and the door closes, and I don't get to hear any of the stuff that happens afterwards, which is usually the nutty stuff.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times, you know, when they get the job, I see them afterwards and they're thrilled. Or, you know, sometimes the rep will let me hear on the phone when they tell them that they're getting the job, which is awesome. Those are the fun times for me. or I see them at the premiere and they've gotten the job, or I see them subsequently and they're recording and they, you know, for me, when the best parts of this job are watching a person who really wanted to be in the feature and then they booked the job, watching the journey from the audition to when the project comes out, and having, you know, seeing that person really get to understand what being a part of a Disney animated feature and becoming a part of history, really, and understanding what it means is like, it makes my, it fills my heart. It just really gives me like a, such a warm feeling. That's changing, the best part of the show.
Changing lives for a lot of people. When you're
well, I wouldn't say that, but I would
no,
say
but
this
for them
for me,
in that moment. No, but for them in that moment, especially if it's like, you know, a first thing for someone to come in and they book, you know, a huge Disney film. That's definitely, you know, for some people, that's a dream like of a lifetime. And you're part of the Disney family in many ways, I would assume, thereafter.
But I'll tell you what, even somebody who already had an established career, I'll never forget. I was in a meeting very early on when Jason Bateman came in to talk about, we were talking about Zootopia. Mm-hmm. And he voices the role of Nick Wilde in Zootopia, the fox that's the lead in that movie. And we had a meeting with him, and somebody asked him in the room, like, you know, because he's been working since he was a child, and he's had such an incredible career, and he directs, and he just could do whatever he wants to do. He didn't have to do our movie. And somebody said to him, like, why now? Like, you know, you could have done an animated feature 100 years ago. What, how come now? And he said, I was waiting for the mothership to call. That's what he said. I will never forget him saying that. I thought to myself, I work for the freaking mothership. Like, it was such a moment. It was like, I don't know. I think Jason Bateman is an incredibly talented human being. And he just said that he wanted to do a Disney movie. And I had the opportunity to be a part of making that happen. So what are the best times for me when, you know, when stuff like that happens?
Sure. Yeah.
That's part of my job is, you know, making that connection.
That's
or
amazing.
Like we were talking about before, when you pluck a 14-year-old girl out of, you know, a small town and on an island in Hawaii, and then she becomes a mega star and a Disney princess.
Yeah. It's, and it's two opposite ends of the spectrum, but it still is the power of the mothership, I guess, that.
And the gratitude is the same. So they are both unbelievably humble and grateful.
I think you have to be, right, to work in this industry at such a level and to have longevity as well. Otherwise, you know, you're not really going to last very long.
Yeah.
When it comes to working within the sphere of this mothership then, because that was something I definitely wanted to touch on. I know you probably can't divulge too much, but the process of casting an animated movie within Disney, I would gather, is very different in some ways to most other places. And I expect that there's probably lots of steps to go through. And I don't know if you can maybe just talk through in an abridged way, loosely, what that looks like as a process from start to finish from a casting side. And I guess you're probably involved quite early on, or earlier than maybe, say, in a live action project. Is that a fair assumption to make?
I would say yes, because our division, it kind of works in a bubble. We're really lucky because our chief creative officer was a director herself. She directed Frozen. That's Jennifer Lee. Okay. And she directed Frozen 2. And she's a writer as well. And so she is very... I wouldn't say hands off because she's very much a mentor, but she, as far as like making casting decisions go, she allows the directors to make their own choices. And then she's there more rather than to, be somebody who has to sign off on something. She's more of somebody there who's to give her blessing on things. So once the director makes a decision about who he wants to cast in a movie, he'll go to her and say, hey, this is what I want to do. And she's like, are you happy with that choice? And they're like, yes. And then she's there to say, great, let's do it. Rather than at other studios that I've worked with, it's more like you have to have so-and-so sign off. And then this person looks at it and that person looks at it and that person signs off and this person might put the kibosh on it. And it doesn't work that way at our studio. So the process really is I'll come in at the beginning, maybe even when the director, because we are a director-driven studio, the director will come up with an idea for what kind of a project they want to do. They start gathering ideas and doing research, and maybe they'll hire a writer that they want to work with. They start coming up with characters. Sometimes I'll come in really early if they need some inspiration for characters. We'll talk about some actors that maybe are inspiring me or that are hot right now, or, you know, like maybe my team and I have gone to festivals and this person's funny and we'll have some meetings, you know, or maybe not. They might have an idea right away of who their characters are and I won't come in until a little bit later, maybe when there's some scenes hammered out, and then we'll start talking. But we usually come in development when the project's in development. And we'll have meetings then with actors, or we wait until we have material and we start doing auditions. Once we have auditions and we like somebody, sorry about that. If we like somebody, then we will we'll take their audition and we'll cut it to picture, which means that we'll match their voice with the images that we have of the character, that maybe even sketches. Mm-hmm. And we'll watch the images on the screen with their voice put to it as best. I mean, that's the best way to say.
Yeah.
Match to it and see if the actor's voice looks good when it's up on the screen with the artwork. And then if it does, then we might go ahead and hire them. And sometimes if there are other actors that are already hired, then we'll play their voices with each other to make sure that they don't sound too much alike or they don't sound funny together. That's part of the process. And then the director is the ultimate decision maker. They use my department use us for guidance to help them make those decisions. And I'm the person that brings people to them. But it's really up to the director who they go with ultimately. And sometimes I just make lists. It depends on if the director is familiar with actors. And if I make a list and the director needs, a little bit of help referencing that person's voice, I'll pull together material. And we'll sit in a room and we'll play material if it's known actors. But our directors seem to be really open to people who are known or not known, or they don't really, Disney in and of itself is a big enough name as far as drawing an audience that I'm not locked into hiring, stars in all of our movies. So that's not our jumping off point ever. Like I'm super lucky for that reason.
Which is really refreshing. Yeah, you get to hire who you think is best without the different hoops.
Exactly. And sometimes it is a celebrity that ends up getting a role. And sometimes we started working on the project 4 years ago and the person had no name. And then by the time the movie comes out, the person is famous for something else. That actually happened that's happened for us before on more than one occasion. I don't need to run down a list.
Yeah.
It's, like two movies have come out and the person becomes a household name and then our movie comes out. And we made a deal with them years before.
Yeah. And you're still hiring them because they're just the best person for the role, irrespective of all the other stuff.
Exactly.
That's amazing. All right, Jamie, listen, I've got someone in the waiting room. So I'm going to give you a break from me. I'm going to bring in Haley.
Okay.
And give Haley 5 minutes to have a chat with you. Hey, Haley.
Hi, Haley.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
All good. Welcome, welcome. I'm going to shut up and let you have 5 minutes with Jamie.
Hi, Jamie. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Very nice to meet you. Welcome.
You too. I know only 5 minutes, so I'll just jump in with a little questions. I'm American. I'm based in London. Right now, with like everything with COVID and how casting and voiceover stuff goes, especially at Disney, are you still doing kind of international things? Is it become a much more like open market, I guess? Or is it now become insular in LA just because of travel restrictions and whatnot?
No, I can cast anybody from anywhere. I mean, it's always kind of been that way, only because for us, we can record you from anywhere you are. I mean, we've had actors coming, you know, recording from all over the world in most of our films. We're lucky because there are studios all over the place that we can patch you in from. I guess usually it comes down to more, you know, do you have permission to work in the country that you're in, I guess. But as far as the rest of it goes, is logistically speaking, you can be anywhere and work for us, which is awesome, because that's the other beauty of voiceover, I think, is that you can be working on multiple other projects and still be available to us, and which makes it nice.
Yeah, just don't jump in a sound booth anywhere, really, I guess.
Your closet, even, if you have a good enough microphone.
I've done it underneath a blanket before, just to create some sort of soundproofing. Although I think
exactly. They're
getting better. And then because you work on, you know, these amazing massive projects. I mean, I loved Raya; it was incredible. And it seems, correct me if I'm wrong, that most of like kind of the main parts are now going to bigger names or, you know, kind of more established actors, because animation is incredible these days and the messages in all the Disney films are so beautiful. But for kind of the smaller parts, how would be a way, I guess, you know, what would you look for in my CV, or what would be a good way to get in contact with you? Or is it certain agents need to have, like, what would be a good, I don't know, first stepping into that world for some, you know, if I don't have necessarily the credits needed to get the lead?
Yeah, I don't look for credits necessarily for any role. It just depends on what the role is. We're not looking for people who are established. We're looking for the right person for a role. It just depends on, you know, what the role is. And sometimes I put out breakdowns. Sometimes we put it on Actors Access. I just say, you know, for actors who aren't necessarily hooked up with the particular rep, if you don't have representation, if I were an actor, I would just start emailing everybody I could, just constantly sending them what I'm up to, if I have a newsletter or a website, and you just never know who's looking at it. Back in the day, people used to say, is it a waste of my money to send out postcards? And I say no, because you never know when your postcard is going to land on somebody's desk and they're going to need somebody to come in and voice one line in an episode of a show that week, and they don't have the right person. I had that happen to me when I was working in live action, where, you know, somebody's postcard landed in the right place at the right time, and we ended up testing them for a movie. So you just have to throw enough stuff against the wall and hope something sticks.
Okay, yeah. That's good to know. Your email's gonna get busy.
Believe me. I say that all the time, and then I get inundated, and I'm like, why did I say that? But the truth is that you just, you know, we do at my studio, I'll cast a project three times. We used to do a table read before a project was greenlit. It's not happening as much anymore, because we're starting to do more scripts in advance of our projects now. We didn't used to do that, but the second time that I'll cast a project is for development dialogue before we actually will cast the project for the production dialogue, which is the permanent cast of the movie. The development dialogue we call scratch. I just did air quotes again, Ashley. That's the second time during this.
I get to do one more now. Right? I get to do one more, so we're level, because now I feel like you're just one-upping me.
Scratch is, you know, we call it scratch because it ends up, you know, not in the film. It's on the floor afterwards, and it doesn't go outside of our building. But I'll hire actors to come in and voice the roles for the storyboards. And those actors usually end up in the movie in some other capacity, or they end up in a different movie because we collaborate so much in our studio. All the other directors in our studio and the writers and producers will hear those actors. So they might end up in a different feature of ours, or in, you know, one of our mini series that we're doing for, you know, our streaming platforms or something along those lines. So I do use, you know, tons of actors, and they're not, you know, all names.
Yeah. That's incredible to know. I didn't know that was a thing, actually. So it's really nice to hear and handy to be like, woo, I could still shine.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, if you actually go and you look at all of our, at the cast lists from the last, since I've been at the studio, like the last 13 years or so, they're not all names.
I saw those lots of additional voices too, which are
it's handy. Not just that. I mean, the people that have been the leads in movies for us, that, like, if you think back, if you look at the film and when it came out and then count back a couple of years or 3 years before the movie came out and think about what those people were doing when we actually put them in the film, they weren't names. They may be names now.
That's a point.
They didn't start off that way.
You definitely have made some people with, like, the Frozen cast and, like, everybody.
Disney made those people. I didn't make those people, and they made themselves too. They were knocking around and, you know, and working their butts off and going to class and, you know, throwing that stuff up against the wall that I was talking about. So they, you know, people, it happens.
Cool.
I mean, when I met Josh Gad, he had not done Book of Mormon when I met Josh Gad for Frozen, he had not done Book of Mormon. He had not done, I think he had done the Daily Show. He was a Daily Show correspondent. That's it.
Oh, cool.
He ended up at a table read that I did for Frozen before it was even called Frozen. And it was, we had postponed it because, well, for a myriad of reasons, but it was way before Frozen even really got started in development, and he hadn't done much of anything, and he'd gone to Carnegie Mellon for college, and he was a friend of a friend of mine, and I had a opening at the table read because the person that I had hired to come to the table read fell out, and I needed somebody kind of at the last minute, and I had a friend who was gonna come to the table read to read the male ancillary roles. And I called him and I was like, I'm desperate. I need somebody to do this role at the table read. Him. My director would really like somebody who has a lisp and who's super funny. Do you know anybody? And my friend said, yes, I know this guy, Josh, and he's super funny. You'll love him. I'm like, I got to get him in here. And I called Josh and I didn't even know him.
That's amazing. That's such a good story.
So, it's not, you know, you don't have to be famous.
Okay. That's good. I'm going to. That makes me feel better. Gonna be sending some emails your way.
Now you know the casting director at Disney, so.
There you go.
It's a good day.
Already a step ahead.
Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I know you've got other people, but I really appreciate you answering the questions and having a quick chat.
It was lovely to meet you, Haley.
Thank you. Hopefully speak soon.
Thanks, okay. Haley. Good to see you. Take it easy. Bye. Amazing. All right. I'm going to bring in Simon, who's in the waiting room, so we can just fire through this again. I'm mindful of the time. So let me bring in him and then we'll wrap it up after he's asked his questions. Simon is, I think he's in LA now. We'll triple check with him. Not that that matters, but I think he is. He's just a black screen. Oh, he's here. Hey, Simon.
Hi, Simon. Hello.
Hi, Jamie. Hi, Ash.
How
are you both doing?
Good. Are you in LA now, or are you still in the UK?
I'm in LA.
You're in LA now.
Great day here. Are you in LA, Jamie?
I am.
All right. I'm the only one in the UK. I'm the only one where it's rainy and dull and miserable in England.
It's going to warm up soon, though, right? That's gonna happen.
Who knows? They always say that. Anyway, we're not here to talk about the weather. I'm going to shut up. Simon, take it away. Have a good chat with Jamie. You got your time. Ask whatever you got to ask.
Thanks so much, Ashley. Hey, Jamie. It's great to meet you. I just listened to the podcast you did with Rachel Naylor, and I really loved hearing about the joy that you get from your work. And particularly loved how you described working with actors and the enjoyment you get from that, but also then the journey, watching their journey as they experience success in one of your projects. That was really just so wonderful to hear. I think some of the language you used was like bewilderment, excitement, and wonderment. I was just like, that's awesome. So it was great to hear that. I wanted to ask you actually just about actor voice reels and about whether you listen to them, how much you listen to them, and whether you, as working in animation, I guess, and large feature films, do you prefer to hear an actor's natural voice, or do you listen to a lot of animation reels? What do you listen to?
Well, it depends on what I'm looking for. If I'm looking for something specific and your voice reel has that specific thing on there and your agent points me towards the specific thing, I might fast forward to whatever it is that's on the reel. But typically I do hire people for their natural speaking voice. But there is a time and a place for people's voice reel or animation reels. I think, Ashley and I were actually just talking about, having various characters on it for, cartoons or TV series or whatever. I think just for us at Disney, we like to hire the actor and have the actor, create the character with their own voice.
Sure.
So yes, I do listen to reels, but it has to be something very specific that I would be looking for.
If you're looking for a particular animal or character that's particularly characterful, or
I guess, or I mean, honestly, I look at acting demos more than I listen to animation reels.
That's so interesting.
The video reels.
Yes. Because I'm looking for acting. I'm looking for acting more than I'm looking for, a voice.
It's more likely.
I would just hire you for your acting abilities and your speaking voice.
Right. And I understand that also you work on voice matching as well to find when there's a...
Sometimes
the studio will need to. Is that right?
Sometimes I do that. Like I did that on Winnie the Pooh. I did that because there was already like an established group of actors that had been booked, because obviously I wasn't even alive when they started working on Winnie the Pooh. But there were an established group of actors, and some of them had, some of them weren't even alive anymore when I did the Winnie the Pooh years ago, the feature. It doesn't happen that often that I match them, but there's actually a division at our studio, at our company, called Character Voices. And if there's like a ride or, some type of, or a toy or something that requires a voice for a character that's already been established, they will hire actors to match those voices. That's just a different casting department.
Okay. It's a different area of Disney.
Why do you do a voice? Do you have a match?
Oh, please do Pooh Bear.
Well, it's something that I've been working on. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I could do this one really well. But it's a skill that, I mean, occasionally the voice matching demos will come in and it looks like they're coming from Disney. And I was curious about an exact match. Or
that's my counterpart in at Disney Character Voices. Yeah, there's another casting director that does that.
Okay. That's interesting. It's sometimes you get these, the audition comes in and you're not sure who the casting director is, but it says the studio. So that's really interesting. I was curious as well then, I mean, in your area of casting, where you have a number of demos, because you were talking about with Rachel, there's the casting by the pound approach that you sometimes have to work with a director, where they want to listen to a lot of demos, and then there's where we've pre-selected a number and you're bringing them in. What is it when you're working with a large number of demos that would particularly stand out for a particular character? And you described magic as one of them. Is that really what it is?
It wouldn't be demos that I would be presenting to the director. It would be auditions. I would audition a bunch of people. I don't usually play demos for directors. What was the question? Because you answered the question. I think you asked the question and then you answered it.
I guess my question is, I was referring to auditions rather than reels.
Okay, but
it was really, what is that magic, I guess is the question. What is the magic?
Oh my god, I think honestly this seems like a lame answer, but it's my gut. Subject casting is subjective, and I believe that the reason why Disney hired me and keeps me on staff is because they like my opinion, and it's just subjective. And I think that whatever just sparks my fancy is just my gut. And so whenever I see an actor or I hear an actor that just makes me say, oh my gosh, that's it. It's just it. I don't have an answer. It is what it is.
You hear it and you're just like, that's the character.
Simon, it's like if I ask you what's your favorite color and you tell me your favorite color and you just, that color just always like, you know, it just always makes you happy, or you always pick things that are in that color. Like you just always like to wear navy blue. Just navy blue just makes you happy. It's just that way with actors when they come in. It's just, I don't have an answer. Just when an actor does that, it just, that's the one. I don't know why.
That makes sense. I mean, I think that
it just clicks.
That really makes sense. I think when sometimes I'll listen to other people reading for something as well, and I obviously don't work in casting, but sometimes it's just like something just pops, and I guess that must be just magic listening to all of those. What's your favorite project that you've worked on so far? You've worked on so many.
Do you know what's funny is that I get asked that question all the time, and I really don't have an answer, and I'll tell you why. The reason is because I get so close to them and I work on them for so long. Sometimes I can be casting a project for like 2 years, and I know everybody on the project so well, and I've seen what happens on the project, not just the casting aspect of it, but the production, what happened to it financially, who was on the project, what people were on it that maybe got replaced, or not just actors I'm talking about, but like, you know, employees, or what was happening at the studio at the time, or whatever it is. It's so much more than what you guys end up seeing on the screen that I can't separate it from that. So it's hard for me to answer that question. I'm very proud of all of them that I've worked on. I'm lucky that I get to work for a studio that I'm proud of the product itself. It's like your children. It's like, who can you say are your favorite children? They all have aspects that you love all of them. And they all have personality traits that you love and personality traits that you would tweak.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I'm not going to ask that question. I was going to say, if anything that you would tweak about. No, I'm not going to ask that.
No, don't pull on that thread.
I wanted to ask you.
We all make mistakes too.
That's absolutely. But then you can't look back on the past, right? I suppose you just try to do better. And learn from that. So I was going to ask you, I mean, I imagine you will have talked a little bit about the conditions in terms of the pandemic over the last year, and about casting a little bit, or maybe not touched on that. Do you see that you'll be moving towards having people back in studio at some point in the future, in the near future, as California changes? Or is it you're going to be continuing to do things remotely? Or how do you see things evolving?
Nothing would make me happier than to get back into the office. And I think that because I work for a large corporation, they're going to have the first word, but I think that also SAG is going to have a lot to say about that. I think that the union is going to have to decide, you know, what's safe for their members. And I think that they're probably going to have to put some parameters in place. I don't really know what's going on. As far as that's concerned, I don't know what is happening in live action. I don't think a lot of my friends who are casting directors are not having people in their offices again yet, even in live action. But I don't think that my division is going to be allowing people back into their offices probably for several months. So I don't really know the answer to that question. I can't wait to get back into the office. I'm sure it will happen at some point, hopefully sooner rather than later.
because I don't like the Zoom thing. It's not the same. You just lose so much. It's kind of like, you know, when you're writing a letter to somebody or an email, there's the tone gets lost. It's just the, you know, the human connection that you get in having an audition live and being in the room with somebody, and that my directors get in establishing a rapport with somebody in the room rather than over Zoom. It's just different. Something gets lost.
Yeah, and then there's the problem with the lag of Zoom. Sometimes you might be on a session and the connection drops, or
oh, that's awful. So timing, especially for comedy, like to try and do an audition for me to read opposite you for do a scene with you, the timing is completely off. It's like, how do I even know if you have good timing? It's impossible.
Very tricky. It's very tricky. trying to do Zoom acting is during the pandemic, I'm continuing with Zoom classes has been a real transition. Absolutely. And just hopefully soon we'll be able to get back into in person for sure. Ashley's nodding his head there. I was also going to ask the other thing was just around auditioning and providing different takes on a character. Mm-hmm. If you're auditioning and you have a slightly different read and it's a completely different take, would you be okay for sending in more than one? Or would you, if you have a different accent that you'd want to present the character in, would you be open to that?
Well, I think if you're sending in an audition, you should just put forth whatever you want to put forth, because the worst that can happen is that the casting director doesn't watch it. But if you're in a room, I would say do the one that you feel the strongest about first, and mention to the casting director that you have more than one option, and see if she asks you, you know, which one do you feel stronger about, or mention to her that you have more than one accent or whatever it is, and then see what she tells you to do. And then if she allows you to do the second one, sometimes casting directors are like, you have one shot, just take your shot. Or they'll redirect you, or they'll ask you to see the second one. Every casting director is different. I'm inclined to give somebody who comes in prepared with more than one thing, I'm inclined to give them a shot to try their second thing, because I don't ever want somebody leaving the room feeling like they didn't have an opportunity to do what they didn't have the opportunity to audition the way that they wanted to. Because I don't want them thinking about it after they leave. I always try and tell an actor, like, once the door closes, forget about the audition because it's over. But they can't. I know. You guys leave and you think about it for the next 48 hours. Like, I should have done this.
Or until the next that. Audition, to be fair. It's
yeah,
until
exactly. Next one. I don't ever want somebody leaving feeling like they didn't have the opportunity that they, you know, went in there to get. But I know that there are casting directors that either A, don't have the time, or they're not inclined to allow the person to do it more than once. So you just have to feel it out and see what the casting director is, you know, willing to let you do.
Reading the room and seeing what they're open to,
for
I guess.
Sure.
Yeah. And how important do you feel credits are in the world that you work in terms of the TV and film credits?
I don't,
because is that as a function of the projects being running for or being in development for such a long period of time that things change so much, or how does
no? I just don't, because I think that the right person doesn't necessarily have to have a long list of credits. I think that sometimes people haven't had an opportunity, or they weren't in the right place at the right time, or they shifted careers in the middle of their life, or you know, there's a myriad of reasons why somebody doesn't have a long list of credits. I don't really care. I just want the right person in the role, and maybe the right person for the role has one credit. I don't care. Or they have no credits and I found them under a rock somewhere. I don't care.
I love that answer. I also think actors are now looking for rocks to hide under just so they can actually Just a whole scurry going on.
A rock in New Jersey somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
But I will tell you that it's more likely that you will end up in one of our films if you have some skills, and it's likely that you will have skills if you have studied and you have gone to school or you have worked with coaches or you have, you know, you have some knowledge of acting. So that's more common, but credits, as far as I don't care about. The knowledge part is important. You know, some of the actors that I know that went to school, that, you know, cause I do have a lot of respect for people that actually go get BFAs and, you know, that graduated from college with degrees in acting or musical theater or whatever it is, or, you know, or they've done plays. I know some really incredible actors who have not booked. They just haven't gotten their break or whatever it is. And I've seen them perform before, you know, like either they've done cabarets or they're friends of my friends that have done little theater projects or whatever. And they are incredibly talented and they just haven't gotten a shot. Either they don't have reps or whatever the case is. They should be in one of my movies. So I try them or whatever. And at some point they might get one. I don't care if they have credits.
Awesome. That's so awesome.
That's so awesome to hear. Well, it's been so great to meet you, Jamie. And thank you so much for the opportunity, Ash, again.
Of course.
And I hope you have a lovely evening where you are, Ash, and a lovely rest of your day where you are, Jamie.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you, Simon.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
I have time for another person if you had another person.
There is no one else in the waiting room. There was going to be three, but is not here. So now we can circle up and sort of wrap it up. I like to finish up with sort of 10 quick fire questions anyway, which,
oh boy,
like all good artists, it's just stolen straight from
inside. Are you going to ask me what my favorite swear word is?
That is one of the questions, but I'll leave it out.
No, it's okay.
I'll leave it out if you want. We'll get to that question and see how you feel. The first question is, what is your favorite word?
My favorite word?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Is that it? That's three words. That doesn't count.
No, I don't know if I have a favorite word.
Okay.
My puppy's name is Truffle. So at the moment, I guess I like the word truffle.
Yeah, let me caveat this and say this is sort of whatever comes to you in the moment, just
okay.
Gut feeling. Doesn't have to be in your obituary at the end of the day, sort of written down as that is the definitive. What's your least favorite word?
No.
What turns you on creatively?
Talent.
What turns you off?
Despair.
Okay. Next question is, what is your favorite swear word? I felt like that was the best place to use my second one of these. It wasn't great.
You're asking me these inside the actor studio questions.
I know.
My favorite. I don't even know what my favorite. I love all of them so much. I mean, just pick any of them. They're all wonderful. They all have their place.
Okay, I'll do an insert and I'll edit in just like me saying a bunch of different ones and people can pick their favorite for you. What is your favorite sound or noise?
Laughter.
And what's your least favorite sound?
Chewing.
When people just like don't close their mouth, it's overly loud.
Yeah,
it's very grating. What job would you most want to attempt aside from your own or ones you've done already in the past? And it sounds like you pretty much have the perfect job here, but assume that you'd pick something else.
Yeah, if I couldn't do what I'm doing now, I would probably want to do
like event decorating. Like I would do like centerpieces and stuff for events.
Cool. What would you never want to do under any circumstance?
My goodness. See, this is a terrible question because if I say something that I don't want to do,
you're gonna get emails.
Like, well, what's wrong with that?
I'll say them then. Accounting, surgeons, like we love all these people, but
I would be terrible at those things. I wouldn't. Here's what I don't want to do. I wouldn't want to do anything where I was in charge of somebody's life because I wouldn't want. I can't be responsible for somebody's life.
But I think that's a fair answer to that question because it's not saying that it's a job that's terrible in terms of being.
No,
a bad job.
I just
it's just
be,
for you. Yeah,
I really should not be put in charge of anybody's life.
Yeah, fair play. Me either.
I'm the fact that my child's alive right now, and then she's going to graduate high school next year. It's like that's enough. Like I've done my job.
You've kept one person alive. That's right. Where it stops. Amazing. Okay, final.
Multiple pets alive too.
Five. Well done. That's always tough to be. That can be harder than kids sometimes. when it's all said and done, what would you like the story of your life to be? What kind of legacy would you like to have left behind?
I just want people to remember me for being a nice person who was funny and generous and that made things easier for people, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I can attest to that from our conversation today, even though it's through the medium of Zoom, that's definitely coming through across the magical ether of technology. All right, JMO, look, this has been an absolute pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you, Ashley.
Final moment, I guess, to you, if you want to just wrap this up. I always give this to the guests to sort of button the whole thing off. Final words, what's the main takeaway you think people who are tuning in should take away from this chat and leave them with?
That I think that that for actors that are listening, that I think that acting is such an amazing career and can be so rewarding, but is also probably one of the most difficult careers and one of the hardest things to do. It's just, you know, besides the instability and the anxiety and all of the things that come along with being an actor in that regard, the emotional aspect, it's just so much work. And I think that if you are really serious and you have the calling and it's just, you know, it you love it, that you should do everything that you can to put as many tools as you can in your box and, you know, really have at it and pursue it and don't give up. But if you don't have, if not everything in your body is telling you that this is what you have to do, that it is just way too hard and that you should find something that drives you in the way that I was just talking about, because everybody thinks it's such an easy thing that, oh, I can just be an actor, but it really isn't. It's probably one of the toughest jobs that I can think of.
I concur. Jamie, thank you so much. You're an absolute blast to talk to.
Thank you.
I appreciate you carving out the time from your busy schedule. I'm sure you have loads of projects to get back to, so I will leave you to it, and hopefully you're back on back in the office soon so you can get back into seeing people in person.
It was so nice to meet you, Ashley. Thank you so much.
Likewise. All righty, Jamie. Enjoy the rest of your day. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.